Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
All right, all, welcome back to the Steve Carsey and the Kid show. He is Steve Carsey, I am the Kid. Steve, say hello to the folks, because we got a lot to talk about, including an amazing performance by a Nationals pitcher and a huge contract extension for another Nationals pitcher. So a big week for Nationals fans.
Yeah, it has been a big week, and thank you guys for joining us on this Saturday morning. It's an early show, but it's going to be baseball-packed, fun-filled show that we're going to bring you today.
Mm-hmm. So let's start off with our one thing. Of course, this is our new thing, our new tradition that we do every single week. Steve, I'd like to start it off, and my one thing. From all the different sports, the playoffs, things like that, basketball. I think you know where I angle with that. My one thing this week would be Max Scherzer. I hope I'm not stealing yours, but Max Scherzer with that 20 strikeout performance against a dominant Detroit Tigers offense. Yeah, I mean, just one of their worst hitters right now is Justin Upton. You know, eventually he's going to turn it around. More on that later in that big contract that he took on, and a lot of the big contracts that have not worked out so far this year, in the last couple of years. But he's probably their worst hitter at this particular point, most inconsistent, et cetera, et cetera. You have Miguel Cabrera, you have Nick Castellanos. You have a whole bunch of other players, Victor Martinez, who's really the only guy who had success that night. Max Scherzer could have realistically had about 23 or 24 strikeouts in that game if he had just one more strike and a few other at-bats. So really completely dominating performance there for a guy who wasn't known to go deep into games before signing this massive 14-year contract, 7-year support. 14-year pay, and now he has two no-hitters and a 20-strikeout complete game against the Detroit Tigers. Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. My one thing is going to stick with the same team.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be Bryce Harper. And
okay.
The type of what they're doing to him, he's getting the Barry Bonds treatment right now. And,
yep.
You know, Joe Maddon with the Cubs, you know, walked him twice with first and second to face Zimmerman, who left 14 guys on base that game. So, you know, my one thing is just, you know, is it too early right now? And I'll pose this question to you, and you can kind of roll into it. Is it too early right now to give Bryce Harper the Barry Bonds treatment? Barry Bonds had to prove over years that he was going to continually hit home runs and be the guy who he is. Bryce Harper, as well as he's done and the career that he has had, is, in my opinion, it's just a little too early. I know he's got a nice swing. I know, you know, he can get hot at times, but he has not proven to me, in my opinion, that he is the type of player Barry Bonds was when he was getting walked and pitched around consistently. So I'd like to hear your opinion on that.
Well, I saw what was happening. I think he had Bryce Harper had something like 6 walks in a game. I think that was last Friday or Saturday. I got to fact check that. But I don't typically agree with that. Obviously, it worked out, as you just said, Zimmerman left 14 guys on base. So I think the bigger thing is for Dusty Baker. He knows that's going to happen. Do you put him a little bit lower in the lineup? Because let's say you have those first and second on for Zimmerman, and Zimmerman draws a walk, gets a single, something like that. You can't walk Bryce Harper with the bases loaded anymore. Do I agree with walking Bryce Harper in certain instances? Yes, because Bryce Harper's playing angry. If nothing else, he's playing very angry right now. He has a chip on the shoulder that he put there. There's so much expectation for him. Don't treat him, because Barry Bonds didn't really get this kind of treatment until, you know, getting walked 170 times as a regular thing until 2001. His highest walk season was 151 in 1996. Great player throughout his whole career. But from that point on, 2001, he was 36 years old, 177. The following year, 198. The year after that, he didn't play as many games, 148 walks. The year after that, 232 walks. This was a guy, we now know why all this happened, but he was being treated as a 60-homer guy, was Barry Bonds. I don't see Bryce Harper at that point yet. But I don't disagree with walking him in certain instances for sure, because Bryce Harper is the type of guy who can finish a game early on. If you have enough runners on base, he can put it out of reach and really fire his team up. So I don't think you want that momentum going that way, especially for the heart and soul of that team to be able to provide that spark. So it's one of those. I wouldn't do it with the guys, with people on first and second, but it did work out in this particular instance it's kind of awkward to be doing that so early in the season, especially. You're also not putting a lot of faith in your pitchers. Do you agree with me on that point, Steve?
I think there's a combination. I think for me, you know, the game's going to dictate. If you have second and third, two outs, and you have first base open, of course you're going to walk them. But I do agree that if the game doesn't dictate for him to be walked, he's a guy that pitchers should face. And I agree with you on that point. I mean, sometimes pitchers can take it a little bit personally and think that, hey, man, to their manager, you know, probably internally, you know, he doesn't have confidence in me to get Bryce Harper out in this situation. And, you know, therefore, you know, may become more of a mental thing for the pitcher. But the overall is what I was getting at is I think Bryce Harper needs to show a little bit more on a consistent basis, mm-hmm. that he's going to be able to drive these runs in to get that type of treatment.
Yep. By the way, it was the 4-game set they had against the Cubs. He was intentionally walked 6 times that game. He only scored 1 run in that, so it just shows you the anemic offense that the Nationals had that series. Again, they got swept in the 4-game set against the Cubs, who are a really good team. It was a 4-3 score. It was a really close game the whole way. So to be walking and putting guys on base is you know, something that you got to wonder sometimes. But Bryce Harper this year alone, Steve, already has 10 intentional walks. He had 15 all of last year in his MVP season, where he had 42 homers, had 99 ribs, and again was the heart and soul of that team. Now Barry Bonds, in his later years, his most prolific years, he had in 2001, 35 intentional walks, 2002, 68, 2003, 61, again shortened season, and then the following season to 2004, where he had 232 walks, as I alluded to earlier. He had, and by the way, he was MVP all 4 of these years, 120 intentional walks. I don't see Bryce Harper getting there, but certainly he's going to eclipse that number and probably get into the 30, maybe even the 40 range, especially if the Nationals start competing and they have more meaningful games down the line. I just think it's something that coaches don't want to be, opposing managers don't want that guy to damage them when the other guys aren't really doing their job so far, again, in the likes of Jason Wirth and Zimmerman, whoever else hits behind Bryce Harper. So, you know, I think there's a part of it that's not as much paying respect to Bryce Harper as there is betting against everybody else in the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. I can agree with that. And you got to remember, Joe Maddon walked him. I don't know if it was – I know for sure it was one time. It might have been twice in extra innings in that situation. So, you know, we can leave it at that. I just – you know, that was my one thing. Is I just think it's a little bit early that – he's getting this type of treatment. But we'll have to wait and see and continue to monitor this as it goes forward, and we'll probably rehash this conversation sometime down the road.
I'm sure we will definitely have this conversation more and more. I mean, it's not like we don't talk about Bryce Harper a lot, because he is pretty much becoming the face of baseball, and every baseball conversation has to have him included. But let's just switch over to other sports right now real quick. Let's just do a quick recap of what happened in the NBA playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs in hockey. We have the Golden State Warriors finishing off the Portland Trail Blazers 4-1. Just truly unbelievable performance by the Warriors team. Klay Thompson playing unbelievably, scoring. I think he's averaging about 29 to 30 points a game. Some of those games with, and some of those games without Steph Curry. Steph comes off the bench, scores 40 plus points in what was that, game 5? They were behind. I tuned in at the first quarter, and they were down by like 15 or 17 points. I'm like, all right, the Trailblazers have some momentum here. Warriors without, you know, without any a lot of mojo at this point. Maybe the Trailblazers build it, you know, pull it out and try to make the series a little more even matched. And little did I know, that game would be one of the best of the playoffs. And the Warriors came back and ended up winning that game, ended up winning Clincher Game 5. And then my biggest surprise, and this is not a slight to the Oklahoma City Thunder, but beating the Spurs in six games, including beating them home pretty handily. And they actually almost blew it the other night. It was game. That was the last 30 seconds were just absolutely incredible. Very heart pumping. But now we have the Golden State Warriors, Oklahoma City Thunder playing. You have an angry Kevin Durant, sort of angry, playing with a chip on the shoulder. He has this looming contract conversations coming up, whether it'll be with the Thunder or somebody else. They just beat the team that lost only one game at home this season, and now they're going over to play the Golden State Warriors, who are the best team in basketball the last couple of years. This sets up for an unbelievable, epic matchup. I don't know if it goes to seven, but it's definitely going to be one of those high-scoring affairs. It's going to be a lot of passion, a lot of heart, and definitely a lot of elbows flying back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I do know about these two teams is, well, at least the Warriors, is they like to run, and Oklahoma City, they can get up and down the court too. And that might pose a problem for Oklahoma City if they get into an up and down match with the Golden State Warriors, because then I think the Golden State Warriors have too much talent and are able to do it. I think that's why the Spurs opposed a better matchup against them, because the Spurs are not afraid to slow it down, and I just don't think Oklahoma City is going to be able to slow it down enough to beat the Golden State Warriors in this round.
And again, Steph Curry returning 40 points off the bench in game five. He just continues to knock down three-pointers. This amazing talent. By the way, now a two-time MVP. And, oh, by the way, beyond that, he's the first ever unanimous NBA MVP. The other two that were close were, I believe, Shaquille O'Neal and LeBron James, who missed by one vote. Steph Curry getting that distinction. This is great for Under Armour, who's obviously his main advertiser. He signed on with them. They got a lot of great talents there, including Jordan Spieth and some others. But Steph Curry lighting the world on fire. Klay Thompson, not to be understated, and the rest of that team, Draymond Green, Iguodala, they all play a big part in that with that team. They have great chemistry. There's no complaining. There's nothing because they're winning. But even still, you see some winning teams here and there that you see egos come about, and they want to take the last shot, or they want to do this. They want to be the one that's on the headlines. This team doesn't have that right now. Got to give them a lot of credit. Steve Kerr, that whole coaching staff, a lot of credit for keeping these guys grounded and having a record-setting year so far. One more step to get to the NBA Finals. Speaking of that, on the other side, the Heat and the Raptors are tied at three games apiece now. The Heat winning game six, so game seven moving on. That's going to be exciting. Whoever wins that game seven has the pleasure of facing the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have not lost so far this postseason, sweeping the Detroit Pistons and then subsequently sweeping the Atlanta Hawks. So it's going to be the Cavs and either the Raptors and the Heat, the Raptors or the Heat. And then you have the Golden State Warriors against the Oklahoma City Thunder on the NBA side. So definitely a great playoff season so far, postseason. On the hockey side, you have the St. Louis Blues moving on, going to the limit again. They did that against the Chicago Blackhawks, beating the Blackhawks in seven. They beat the Dallas Stars in seven, the number one seed Dallas Stars. So St. Louis Blues have moved on to face the San Jose Sharks, who went to a game seven against the Predators and ended up winning that game seven. On the other side, it was a little bit easier for these guys, at least record-wise. The Tampa Bay Lightning beating the New York Islanders in five, 4-1 in that series. And then the Washington Capitals hopes yet again dashed, destroyed, and Pittsburgh Penguins, who are now going to the conference finals yet again. A great stretch that they've had, especially since Sidney Crosby's been there, Evgeny Malkin, and a lot of the talents that have come and gone over that time, including Marian Hossa. But they end up winning that series 4-2, so it sets up the Lightning against the Penguins and the San Jose Sharks against the St. Louis Blues. And again, these all look like they're going to be great series here. It's going to be a lot of hostility on both sides. Again, this is the next step to getting to the Stanley Cup Finals, and of course, and tensions are at all-time high at that point. So, I don't expect any sweeps in these sets, but you know, we got some really good teams, really powerful teams squaring off in the conference finals here.
Yeah, I think both basketball and the NHL are going to have really good conference finals. I believe the game one in the Eastern Conference was last night, and I want to say I saw it on the highlights and on TV that the Lightning beat the Penguins in game one, but they lost their goaltender,
the
Lightning did. Yeah,
yep.
So, you know, that may be a tough go having their backup because taking him off on a stretcher didn't look like that he was going to come back and be able to be able to make it in the series. So they're going to have to – the Lightning are going to have to win the series. They have to win it with their backup goaltender. But they're talented enough on the offensive side of the puck to be able to score some goals, and they play good D. They're a very good team, so I'm looking forward to that series as well.
Mm-hmm. So you are right. The one game in, that was last night, the Tampa Bay Lightning won. They did end up losing star goaltender Ben Bishop. It's been phenomenal in the playoffs. Obviously, the fact that they're in the Eastern Conference Finals shows that. Their backup, Vasilevsky, I'm sorry. Being that I'm Russian, it should be a lot easier for me to pronounce that, but I apologize. I left when I was 3 years old. But he made 25 saves in relief of Ben Bishop against a very strong Penguins team. So you got confidence at this point. Again, losing Ben Bishop is never easy, but this is a very resilient team. We'll see what ends up happening here. But again, their backup goalie, Vasilevsky ends up making 25 saves in relief of Ben Bishop. So that is the NHL playoffs. We'll continue to monitor and give you the breakdown there and the big news, obviously, on that side. So heading back to baseball now, I mentioned that I would just fact-check the Max Scherzer thing. So the season, he had 21 wins. He had no complete games that season. He was a Cy Young winner. The following season, 18 wins. He did have one complete game, one shutout, which was a first in his career up to that point. He was 29 at that age. He was, what season was that? That was just, looks like his sixth season. Now, since then, he's had five complete games in 41 starts with the Washington Nationals, has five complete games, three shutouts, again, two of those being no-hitters. So far, looking like a great signing for the Washington Nationals. Again, it's a seven-year playing contract, 14-year deferred payment contract, in that $200 million plus plus salary, $210 million to be exact. On the other side, you have the other guy who's going to be competing for hopefully for a much longer time, Clayton Kershaw, and he just absolutely dominated yet again, dominated the Mets, who are going to be a playoff contender year-round, and they've been on a hot streak up until that point. And what does he do? He goes and shuts them down, Steve. Nine innings, three hits, one walk, 13 strikeouts. Unbelievable. Lowers the ERA from 2.04 heading into that game to 1.74. Without a doubt, I don't think anybody can say that there's not someone that they'd rather have starting, at least on the regular season game, than the Clayton Kershaw. He has two shutouts already this season. Two of his last three starts have been those shutouts. He's only given up in his last, 25 innings pitched, only given up 14 hits, and that's been strikeouts three starts ago against the Padres, 10 against Toronto, again, a very dominant offensive team, and 13 against the Mets, who are last year's World Series team from the NL. He's just in the zone right now. I don't think there's any other way to describe it.
Yeah, he's an incredible talent, you know. I mean, well-deserved through his prime years that the Dodgers extended him. They didn't want to lose this guy. He's the face of their franchise, and you know, he just continues to go out there start after start, you know, game after game, and just pitch and do his thing. I mean, this guy, you know, if he continues to do this over you know, the next 5 to 7 years, it's gonna be really, I'll be really curious, and it's gonna be really you know, what to see his numbers look like by the end of that run. But you know, everybody has their opinion, and you know, when he didn't start out so well a year ago, people were doubting the contract. But he goes out every fifth day. He doesn't worry about that stuff. He pitches, and you know, the numbers speak for themselves.
That was former teammate who headed over to division rival, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and just an amazing contract, puts him as one of the highest earning for this season. I think the second highest earning pitcher in the game. Clayton Kershaw still the most. I think Kershaw's getting $35 million this year. Greinke at $34 million. but I'm not 100% on that. I remember seeing that before. But Greinke, a 5.26 ERA this year. Who would have thunk it? Another poor performance against the San Fran Giants, who I don't want to say lit him up, but scored four runs against him. He had three walks. His whip, which is the biggest problem for me, if you have a low whip and you're giving up runs, okay, so guys are just seeing you right. Your pitches are a little flat, okay, but at least you're not walking guys. When your whip is 1.49 and you were one of the best pitchers of the last several seasons, there's something really something wrong. I don't know if it's just mechanics, it's confidence, that big contract. We've seen that a lot. Seen John Lester fall off a little bit last year after signing that big deal with the Chicago Cubs. This year, back sub 2 ERA. That ERA went up after that last start against the Padres. And his whip is now right around one again. So you have that. You have Shelby Miller, who's been a disaster so far. There's no other way to describe it. His ERA is almost 7 after being one of the best pitchers in baseball, especially the first half. Not record-wise, because he didn't get any run support. But his ERA, everything that he did last year was on point. His whip is closer to 2 than it is to 1. At this point, 1.74. There's something wrong in Arizona. Something wrong with the Diamondbacks. The offense isn't quite there. Goldschmidt isn't exactly himself so far to start the season. There's a lot there in baseball, and we're seeing this across all of baseball, Steve. Seeing guys like Prince Fielder, just guys that I'm sure they turn around at the end of the year. That's kind of their track record. But seeing guys like Teixeira is just absolutely awful. You're seeing a lot of big-name guys, big marquee guys, not being there. It's just there's no other way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys with track records usually come out and do what they normally do. But, you know, as guys get older, as guys get dinged up and, you know, they're just not feeling as well. They don't have the same athleticism. They don't have the same swing. You know, their swing is maybe a tick slower as they get older. And you know, it's just father time. It's just one of those things where these guys, they get a little bit older. Their bat speed gets a little bit slower. Their arm speed gets a little bit slower, no matter if you're a pitcher or a hitter. And, you know, that's why they get signed to these long-term contracts, because these teams want them in the beginning. They care about the 3 or 4 years early in their contract, and obviously not so much about the back end of that contract. You look at CC Sabathia when the Yankees signed him. When they signed that deal with CC, they were looking for the first 3 or 4 years. They saw their window, the first 3 or 4 years to win a World Series. And, you know, they won in 2009. So, you know, these are things that teams look at. You know, there's a lot of money being thrown around. And, you know, when the marquee player hits the market and that team has a need and they give the guy a little bit extra money to come play there or an extra year on their contract, they know what they're doing as far as, you know, giving the extra year just to lure that player to that team to sign. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You get a guy early in his career, or earlier, I should say, in his career, through the first few years of their prime, where they're going to be successful, and you know what their track record is. And then basically what you're doing is you're gambling and you're taking a chance on the back end of those contracts and hope that that guy is, you know, going to be the same guy when you sign him, which he usually is not. And you know, that's what ends up, you know, hurting teams down the road if they're not able to overcome the type of salaries that they're paying these guys to rebuild their clubs.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have other teams that have rebuilt their clubs, like the Mets. We saw what they did last year, which pretty much really shocked everybody, including the Mets. I don't think anybody on the Mets team believed that they would do what they ended up doing last year, even after getting, you know, on the Cespedes, going all the way to the World Series and dominating in the playoffs, especially against the Cubs, before losing, obviously, to the Royals. But they had this team. It looked like a destiny squad. The pitching staff was ridiculous. You have Zach Wheeler coming back. They re-signed Bartolo Colon, who has been really good for them again this year, the ageless wonder. We talked about him several times already this season. You have Noah Syndergaard, the man they call Thor, had a great start the other night against the LA Dodgers. He ended up going 8 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned, 1 walk, 6 Ks. By the way, ends up hitting a couple home runs in that effort as well, and was the only runs. It was a 4-3 game. I think it was a 4-3 game. But he ends up hitting two home runs. He did everything that he could have been asked for and more. But he ran on the season, 2.53 ERA, 1.04 whip. He ended up leaving that game. It was revealed later on by Terry Collins that It was revealed after the start that he wasn't brought out for a ninth, partially due to issues that they were having with other pitchers in the rotation, namely Steven Matz, and him being pulled from his start with the, he doesn't want to push Noah Syndergaard too soon. But then there's some other stuff that that have been talked about, like precautionary exam that was done on his on Syndergaard's elbow. So it's a guy that already throws hard, throws fast. He's got some mileage on those arms already just because that's his nature. He wants to go out there and pitch. Matt Harvey, who's the guy who came back from Tommy John last year, the one they called the Dark Knight, pitched the most innings in history after coming back from Tommy John. He's not the same this year. Who knows if he ends up coming back? We hope he does. He has that kind of character that he's just kind of pigheaded in a good way. But his ERA is almost 5 at this point. His strikeouts are not there, only 41 so far, 153 whip. And he's getting decisions in every start, 35 season, but not the same pitcher that we're used to seeing from him. And the teams are roughing up. I mean, he got beat up in Colorado pretty bad. I know it's Colorado, but he's also Matt Harvey. Ended up giving up five earned on 11 hits. He's just not having a good run so far. Do you think this is just early season stuff for pitcher Steve, or is just more of, you know, they're being asked for so much, and, you know, every time you throw a ball, you're shredding your arm, and they have to be a little more careful with these guys?
Yeah, in Matt Carvey's case, I don't think it's anything physical, to be honest with you. I just think that, with not knowing anything with the situation and being an outsider and reading articles and watching him on TV, he's doing really well early in the game. He's innings 1 through 4, I think his ERA is almost probably below 2. And as he gets into the 4th and 5th innings, I'm thinking that there's some type of mechanical flaw that he's not able to repeat as he gets deeper in the game, or if he gets from the stretch, and or when guys get on base, and he's having problems there. He's probably making a few mistakes, leaving balls up out over the plate, and getting hurt by that. It's one of those things where managers are a little bit more careful with starting pitchers, especially with guys that throw so hard. And there's a lot of stress with each and every pitch. I mean, you just got to monitor how stressful innings are as the game is being played. You know, if a starter has, tough early innings, later in the game, he's not going to be probably as strong because there's a lot more high leverage pitches if there's guys on base and the intensity gets ramped up a little bit. So, I don't see a big thing about it. I just see that, these guys, sometimes I think we expect way too much out of players and what starters can do. I think people say, okay, Noah Syndergaard, Matt Harvey, they're going to go out there and they're going to throw 7 shutout innings every time out, or one run ball in 7 innings. It just doesn't happen like that. You know, some days are better than others. Some years are better than others. And, sometimes the ball gets hit at people in certain situations. And sometimes that ball is about 3 or 4 feet to the shortstop's left, and it's a base hit, and things unravel a little bit. So, I see these guys being okay as the season continues to go on. You know, they'll get sharper, they'll get better, and they'll get into a rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully we see a lot of bounce backs here forward, both offensively and obviously on the pitching side. You have a guy like Dallas Keuchel, 2-5 so far, 5.58 ERA, 160 whip. Becomes alarming to the outsider. You have Scott Kazmir, who signed that deal with the LA Dodgers, obviously a big chance there. 5.54 ERA so far, 142 whip, hasn't got past through 7 innings yet so far this season from what I'm looking at. So he struggled a lot. You have a lot of catchers who are just really non-existent offensively. You have Jonathan Lucroy, Real Muto of Miami, and obviously Yadier Molina, who's leading the league for at-bats. He's 126 at-bats, batting .341. No homers so far, but he's a batting average guy, which is fine. That's what he's become. But you have a lot of other guys struggling. You have Wellington Castillo of Arizona doing a pretty good job there. But then after that, it's really becomes almost a crapshoot. It's a lot of inconsistency, a lot of guys who just Buster Posey's hitting .268. And again, it's early. You can go on one hot stretch and all of a sudden you're a 300 hitter. I'm not reading too much into it yet, but seeing what's happened to Derek Norris, who had such a great start last year to begin, You know, if you're a fantasy player, this has been very confounding to you. The catching position has been awful, especially now that Carlos Santana doesn't have catcher eligibility. That's Yan Gomes, who hasn't been very good in that position there. So you lose that kind of flexibility as well. That's one catcher that you could have had first and catching eligibility you lose out on, so you have less talent. You have Salvador Perez, who's been great over the last couple seasons, hitting .227. Granted, has a 5-dinger so far, 20 ribs, making it count, but he's just not quite there, and a lot of guys are just not playing regularly from the catching position. We'll end up seeing what happens there. It could just be early on. Managers don't want to burn these guys out, and you can understand that, Steve, obviously, because it's a long season. It's longer than it has been in the past, and I don't want to say that it's not game-wise. It's the travel. It's the media. It's the demand that you have to be around 24/7 pretty much. It's not an easy life. That people just think, oh, you show up at the, you know, you show up a half hour before, before game time, and you're, you know, you get in. It's not that easy. It's very taxing, very demanding on the body. So I don't blame managers, especially for catchers, to be able to pull them back a little bit or only let your pitchers go 5-6 innings so early on in the season. I don't think that's a bad strategy at this point.
Yeah, catching's a taxing position. You know, you're squatting down. There's a lot of things that are happening. You know, you said the mental part of it. They have to go over scouting reports. They got to know. They got to see what's going on in the field. They're the general. They're the quarterback. So, you know, not only is it taxing physically, mentally it's taxing as well. So, I mean, I think as long as you have a guy back there that has the qualities of, you know, running a pitching staff, knowing what needs to be done, you know, you can put his offense on the back burner. You know, your guy blocking balls, calling a good game, having the comfort level with the pitchers, you know, the pitchers like throwing to a certain guy, you know, always makes things easier for the team and for both the pitcher and the catcher because they're always on the same page. They get into a good rhythm, you know, have quick innings and get your team off the field and get them back off on offense. So, you know, catching, I don't look at it as, you know, a really an offensive position. Your offensive positions are in the corner of the field. You know, first, third, left, and right are where you expect homers and RBIs to come out of. You know, up the middle, you're looking for more just, you know, defense and be strong up the middle. Catcher, pitcher, short, second, center field. And then, you know, that's how teams get rounded out. I think if you look at teams that are really, really good and really consistent, that's the formula that that teams have. You know, their corner outfielders and their corner basemen on the infield are their power guys and drive-in runs, and then they're exceptionally well on the defensive side of the ball up the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of good quality teams that are built to perform and built to run this season, you have the Texas Rangers who are waiting on getting Yu Darvish back. Of course, their ace, their perennial Cy Young guy, Tommy John surgery, shut down. They're hopefully get him soon. They've signed Kyle Loesch to a minor league deal, which I think is pretty good. Add some longevity for them. Could be a bullpen guy. Could make some spot starts for him. I think that was a good addition. Last night, though, is the main story here. R.A. Dickey goes up, pitches a sterling game against the Texas Rangers in Texas. Of course, knuckleballer R.A. Dickey has had a lot of ups and downs in his career, has become more widely known ever since going over to the Mets. But yesterday, he's going up against the Texas Hall of Famer, four-time All-Star Adrian Beltre, one of the best third basemen of this generation. And what does he do? Not only strikes him out, he makes Adrian Beltre look silly. Adrian Beltre pretty much falls down, bat flies out of his hand, completely out of his shoes, literally, completely out of his shoes. And I don't know if you saw that at bat, Steve. I just want to point at that. It's just, yeah, Prince Fielder sitting in the dugout, not knowing what's going on. I'm not sitting in the dugout, on the on-deck circle. And you see that happen. What do you think as a ball player at that point? And have you ever faced a knuckleball yourself, either in high school days, which I don't believe there's a lot of knuckleballers, but college or anything like that? Have you ever went against a knuckleball?
Never have faced a knuckleball. I didn't see the at-bat with Adrian Beltre. But, yeah, you know, a lot of guys like to have fun, but if he's swinging, losing the bat, I mean, Fielder's probably thinking, you know, it's going to be a pretty tough go when he gets to the plate with that knuckleball. So, you know, Adrian Beltre is a pro in what he does, and if you're telling me he looked that bad, the knuckleball must have really been dancing last night.
Yeah, it was a great performance again for R.A. Dickey. Great spot star for me. I picked him up. I streamed him in my fantasy league. Thank you very much, R.A. Dickey. I had to give you a shout-out there on both sides. We have a lot of dominating performances still going on, a lot of guys continuing their hot stretch. Bryce Harper, of course, you mentioned before, hit the go-ahead homer last night. You have Chris Sale, continues to do his thing. You have a lot of amazing stories so far to start the season off, Steve. You have a lot of oddness with some of the guys that you expect to do really well, some of the teams you expect to do really well not doing that well so far. We keep talking about the Astros. Jake Arrieta is on another level. He's going tonight. He's been nothing short of amazing so far. 6 wins so far, 6-0 in the season. 0.88 whip, 1.13 ERA. They're talking about contract extension for him. Oh, by the way, Steven Strasburg just got a 7-year, $175 million extension. So those teams that were lining up to outbid the competition when he became an official free agent, probably going to command a lot for Steven Strasburg in terms of prospects, draft picks possibly, and then you have to pay him. But Jake Arrieta has been the best pitcher in the last this year. Well, not the best pitcher, but one of the top three pitchers, somebody that's become really dependable, dominant. He's 30 years old right now, Steve, just crossed 30 in March. Contract extension talk. What would you do if you were a front office of the Chicago Cubs? Of course, you'd like to lock him up. What term do you feel comfortable with, and what dollar numbers, given the market today, do you feel comfortable throwing at a guy like that, considering all the other dollars you've spent so far and all the young talent that you still have yet to lock up, like Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo? Those guys will be coming around in short order as well.
Yeah, well, see, with Bryant, this is only technically his first full season, so he's still got like 5 more years before he's able to become a free agent. You know, he'll go through arbitration and do things like that. But, you know, as far as Arrieta goes, I think if you're able to get him for, you know, somewhere in the 4-year extension for like $100 million, you know, maybe you go 104 or 108 and give him, you know, anywhere between 25 and 27 million a year, but go shorter on the years and then put maybe a couple option years on the back of that, you know, however they would want that work out, especially that he just turned 30. You know, 4 years is probably going to take him, you know, they're going to buy out a couple arbitration years, I believe. I think he's got 2 left. And if they do that and buy out those 2 arbitration years, it'll take him to the end of his 34, 35 year season, which is where you see pitchers start to decline, you know, and that last year of Arrieta's deal might not end up being the best, but, you know, that's as far as I would go with him, because now at the end of Arrieta's deal, you have that money come off the books. You have Chris Bryant in that range of becoming a free agent, and you can use those dollars that come off the books to re-sign him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Going to be interesting what happens there. He already said, pretty much indicated there's going to be no hometown discount for him. So, but he's a Missouri guy. So, you know, if that includes the St. Louis Cardinals or maybe even the Kansas City Royals, who not exactly in that particular area, but he's from Farmington, Missouri, and he said pretty much indicating no hometown discount. You know, sometimes you, as a fan, you're like, oh, come on, that's ridiculous. All you guys care about is the money. Well, yeah, that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, obviously you want to win, but you have to get paid. Your career can get cut short any time, as we've seen so many times across all different kinds of sports and sports entertainment is what happens. So you try to get as much money as you can when someone's willing to pay it. And sometimes it works out for the team. Sometimes it doesn't. In fact, a lot of times, most recent history hasn't. Look at Justin Upton, talked about him before, Steve. And I just want to kind of wrap up with some of this, because we're coming up with heels of Steven Strasburg getting that mega deal, 7-year extension, $175 million. Hasn't really, a lot of people are going to say that he doesn't really deserve that kind of money, considering you don't really know what to expect from the guy. Yes, he's dominant when he's out there and healthy, but he hasn't put out that Cy Young type season to be able to command that kind of money. So it does change the way the market looks. Justin Upton, the guy who signed a big deal. He was held out for a long time. Nobody was signing him. There were really no bites for him. so far this season, 140 at-bats, 35 games played. He has 7 walks, 57 strikeouts, .214 batting average. Again, it's early, but it's not that early. It's not the first week of the season. He's got 14 runs so far, and the team, they have so many great talents. Again, I talk about Victor Martinez. He's a perennial 300 average guy. He's hitting almost 340. This right around 340 right now. It's been great bouncing back from last year. You have Nick Castellanos, who's been great hitting, I believe it's 370 or somewhere in that range. You have Miguel Cabrera, one of the best hitters ever. Ever. So we have the tied for fifth. Is actually Victor Martinez's batting average went up. He's batting .358 with teammate Nick Castellanos. They're tied for fifth best in baseball at .358 through this juncture in the season. You got to be concerned about stuff like this with Justin Upton. It could be the big contract thing, but when Melvin Upton Jr., aka BJ Upton, signed that big deal years ago, it was the end of his career at that point. It just completely went downhill. You hope that this doesn't happen to Justin Upton. You hope it's just some early stuff. But we've seen this happen with other guys like Carl Crawford. You've seen the awful contract that the Pablo Sandoval signing has been. The Hanley Ramirez contract for the Red Sox last year was dreadful. This year, obviously, a little better. But still, in the same breath, you got to worry about these kind of mega-sized contracts, especially for guys that that you believe do command those kind of numbers. But you never know when a guy's on the decline. And Justin Upton has so much talent, but so far, Steve, he has 9 RBIs on the season, 2 homers, 8 doubles, 30 hits, batting .214 after that mega contract. I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, these teams just have to be wise, and they have to be careful on who they sign these type of contracts to. You better be right when you do this. You know, I've personally never been a huge fan of the Upton brothers. I think they have to be in the right lineup and in the right place to succeed, where there's not a lot of pressure on them. I think that there was a reason why there weren't a lot of teams that were trying to bid for Upton. The Detroit Tigers had some money left over. They had signed who they needed to as far as they thought was good on their pitching staff. And, you know, they took a chance on this being the last piece, maybe to plug in that lineup to give them more offense that they needed. And obviously early on, it just hasn't worked out for them. I mean, is Upton going to probably bat .214 for the year? No, probably not. He's going to get hot. He's going to go on a run. But what you look for is consistency when you give out these contracts, like, yep. Victor Martinez or Miguel Cabrera or – whoever the big contracts are, you look for consistency throughout the year and don't have these waves of the up and down, the up and down wave of, streaks and then poor streaks. It's one of those things. Again, I think GMs need to be smart. I think they need to have, and feel what the right mix is. I mean, again, the one that comes back is last year when they traded for Cespedes and they plugged him in that lineup, and you've seen what he did for that lineup and how he made that transition. To me, the three years and $75 million that the Mets gave him was spot on, and that was the perfect place for Cespedes to be, and perfect for that Met team in that lineup. Where Upton, for me, maybe not the best spot in the American League where he's gonna see a lot more breaking balls, and guys are going to have a little bit a little bit more of an idea on how to pitch him. So that's kind of my take. I just think that teams need to be smart when they're spending $100 million plus. You can't take a flyer on a guy thinking that he's going to just because of what he's done in another lineup and another team is going to make their team that same type of player through that stretch.
Another guy trying to and expecting to get a mega deal is Jose Bautista. A lot of people have laughed at the numbers that he's asked for, but batting .208 so far this season, 6 homers. He's almost 100 points below Brandon Belt, who's batting .306 on the season. Belt has 4 homers, and the only reason I'm saying that is because I love stats and numbers, and I think it's interesting. And he's batting 100 and 23 points below Odubel Herrera of the surprise Philadelphia Phillies, who are 20-15 now. So it doesn't look like they're themselves. You know, it might be passive. Yes, you want to be able to honor them and give them a thank you for what they had done for the franchise, but you can't just do it anymore. It is a business after all. A lot of these bad decisions, a lot of these bad contracts, there's more bad contracts than good ones. We see what's happened with CeCe Sabathia. Of course, some of that is off the field issues. You see it happen with Mark Teixeira really the last few years, even though with the power last year, the injuries. There's a lot of stuff that that can happen over a long deal when you're giving so much money away, and it hampers your ability to do a lot of different things. So, by the way, just one quick note on the Uptons. You have Melvin Upton Jr., who would have thunk it, has four homers, two more than his brother, is batting .261 on the season, .346 on base percentage, which is a lot better than he's been doing. It's actually batting above his career average of .244 and his on-base percentage of .346, above his career average of .325, and his OPS, of course, higher as well as a result. So that pretty much wraps up this this week's edition of the Steve Carson and the Kid Show. Again, you have Jake going today. You have a lot of great games. So later today, you have a doubleheader. You have the Nationals and the Miami Marlins facing off today in doubleheader. Not a great pitching matchups from the Marlins side. You have Justin Nicolino going, and you also have Kendry Flores going, making his first start. So he's going to be called up to make that start. But again, there's a lot of great storylines going on in baseball. Of course, you have so many great ones going on outside of baseball as well, including what's going to end up being my last lick. Before we get to that, I'd like to yield the floor to you, Steve, to see if there's anything that we had missed so far this week that you'd like to cover, baseball or other sports, and then we'll move on to the last leg.
You know, I think we have covered quite a bit in this show. I mean, I know we've talked a lot about, you know, the Nationals, which is deservingly so with, you know, the extension of Strasburg and Harper and, you know, Scherzer. So, you know, we've done it, and then if you want to yield the floor to me for the last lick, or do you want to take it and go first?
No, I'll yield it to you. I don't think we've ever talked about on the show in the year plus that we've been doing the show, about almost 16 months. Boy, it's been a great run so far, and it's going to continue getting better, but we've never talked about this, to my knowledge, to my recollection. So I want to surprise you and finish up the show with it.
Okay, well, my last lick, it'll be relatively short this week, but it's going to go on the Jose Reyes deal on the domestic violence. You know, I just want to credit Major League Baseball for coming out and setting a precedent. You know, they did it with Chapman and gave him 30 days. Now, you know, Reyes is suspended through May 31st, which essentially is 2 months of the season. He's going to have to give back his salary for the first 2 months of the season and instead of having paid leave and whatnot. But I just want to credit Major League Baseball of bringing this issue to the forefront, having people understand that no matter what sport you're in, you're no bigger than, you know, anybody else. You're no bigger than the game. If you go ahead and do something to a woman or to a child or to anybody and have some type of domestic violence, that it's not okay to do that, and there will be repercussions, you know, one way or another, and not only in the pocketbook, but Jose Reyes's reputation has taken a hit, and I'm sure, you know, Chapman's has taken a hit to a certain extent, you know, and they're going to have to build the trust with other players, and they're going to have to build the trust with the fans to get them back on their side. And, you know, overall, I think if this becomes more of an issue with domestic violence, I think that it's the fines, not only the fines and the pay that'll be taken away, but I think the days that you're able to play is going to continue to go up. And I just think that, you know, this needs to be set as a precedent right now. And Major League Baseball has done that. And I credit them for, you know, going out and doing what they did to both of these guys and not letting them get away with what has happened.
Absolutely. Jose Reyes losing a third of his season. A lot of people think, oh, you know, it's only a couple weeks away. Got to look at it. In the NFL, you get suspended for four games for what do you call it, substance abuse, things like that. Obviously, domestic violence is a bigger issue and needs to be handled differently. It's to be handled with more stringent suspensions and obviously other stuff. He's lost a third of the season. He's got to put that money back. His salary last year was just under $9 million, I guess, the back end of that long-term contract that he received years ago. But he's going to be suspended the first 51 games of the season. You're talking about, again, a third of the season for a guy who needs to be able to fix himself anyway on the field to be able to throw himself and get into so much trouble off the field. You got to question what's going on with this guy in his head and all that kind of stuff. But, again, it's been an opportunity, if nothing else, for Trevor Story of the Rockies to be able to do what he's been doing so far this season. It's had a great start. And you might not even see Jose Reyes as often as you might think. When he comes back, they might, who knows what they end up trying to do with that. But again, it's a last lick that I'm glad you brought up, because I knew there was something I was missing, Steve. And that was the one thing. I apologize to those, to everybody. I hope you don't think that we were undercutting the issue or understating how the importance of it. But my last lick is going to be about golf. And I don't talk about golf because my one experience playing normal golf, which is, 18 holes, I only made it to 3 holes and I skipped 2 of them. So I didn't do too well. But it is fun. I can see why a lot of people understand it. It's just, it's not as easy as it looks. And it's not as easy as they make it look on TV. Obviously, Jason Day setting a 36-hole record at the Players' Championship. Of course, a lot of pressure, a lot of media, a lot of fans, a lot of everything going on. He ends up breaking a record that was set by Greg Norman, of course, a great man whose record to beat, at TPC Sawgrass in 1994. He was 15-under for 129, breaking by one the record of by Greg Norman that I said before. So Jason Day, incredible so far, the number one player in the world, and setting the record, obviously. So I want to give him a hat tip, and obviously a big shout out to Jason Day, Players Championship, looking amazing, number one golfer in the world, proving it again by record-setting performance there. Again, this is through 36 holes, so see what he ends up with. But this is just absolutely incredible. He's leading in the Players Championship, so again, big hat tip and big shout out to Jason Day. And again, something we haven't talked about, which is golf, but everybody deserves distinction when there's something that's happened that's been great or historic or otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. Great last lick. You know, Jason Day has made himself into, the perennial golfer, being talked about in many aspects. I mean, obviously not in Tiger Woods type of heyday, but Jason Day has been nothing but phenomenal. But, another week showdown. What a great week. A lot to talk about, covered a lot of subjects, and just want to thank everybody for joining us on this early morning Saturday, and we look forward to having you back again next week and catching some updates and catching our opinions and what we think about, not only in baseball but other sports as well.
Absolutely. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned to CarsayAndTheKid.com for more details on our upcoming shows, upcoming guests, and all that fun stuff. So again, thank you to echo what Steve just said. Thank you to all the fans out there continuing to make the show better than we can make it, because you provide us with a lot of feedback and give that adrenaline rush when we see our stats and we see what people are saying and what they're showing about the show. That's all that kind of stuff. So we greatly appreciate it. Keep it going. Never forgotten. We always love it. And it helps us to create a better and more enjoyable experience for you guys. Again, thank you. And enjoy a fun-filled weekend of sports. And we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.